Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox at cindysheehansoapbox.com. I'd like to thank you for following me to the internet from terrestrial radio. We decided since radio is mostly moving to the internet, we'd make the jump now. You can still reach me, as always, at cindy@cindysheehansoapbox.com. We still want your soapbox rants. We still want your Ask Cindy questions. So feel free to get a hold of me. And anyway, we're here to stay, and we're hoping a community rises up around the show and around my new exciting internet booklet, Myth America. I'm going to give you more details at the end of the show about the book. This month is Women's History Month, and one of my favorite bumper stickers or buttons says, "Well-behaved women rarely make history." Today we'll be chatting with a woman that's not so well-behaved about a woman that was not so well-behaved, Jeanette Rankin. When we come back from this break, we'll be chatting with my guest, activist and protest scholar, Jean Marie Simpson. The underwriter of today's show is Oakland's Grand Lake Theater. This spectacular vintage movie palace is one of the last independent theaters in the Bay Area. The Grand Lake never shows commercials before the movie, and fresh popcorn with real butter is free every Monday through Thursday. On Friday and Saturday nights, the mighty Wurlitzer organ is played in the main auditorium. Schedule information can be found at grandlaketheater.com. That's grandlaketheater.com.
A Nation Rocked to Sleep, written and read by Carly Sheehan. Have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? The torrential rains of a mother's weeping will never be done. They say he's a hero. You should be glad that he's won. But have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? He must be brave because his son died for another man's lies. The only grief he allows himself are long, deep sighs. Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? They say he died so the flag will continue to wave. But I believe he died because they had oil to save. Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? Have you ever heard the sound of a nation being rocked to sleep? The leaders want to keep you numb so the pain won't be so deep. But if we, the people, let them continue, another mother will weep. Have you ever heard the sound of a nation being rocked to sleep?
As I promised before the break, my guest today is Jean Marie Simpson. Jean Marie has been a peace activist for 25 years. She's a life member of WILF, that's the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. She's a theater artist. She wrote and starred in the play A Single Woman. We're going to talk about the protagonist of that play a lot today in our interview, Jeanette Rankin. I actually had a voiceover in the movie for that play, and that's available on DVD. That's A Single Woman. She performed that 263 times all over the world, and she has a new project called Coming in Hot. It's based on the book Powder, which is writings by women in the ranks from Vietnam to Iraq. It's slated to open in the Bay Area in September, so we'll keep you posted as to that so we can all go out and support the play. Jean Marie, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Cindy. It's so great to hear your voice.
And it's nice to hear your voice again. It's been a while. The reason I'm bringing you on today is because it's Women's History Month, and there is International Women's Day on March 8th that I celebrated down in Los Angeles and was celebrated all over the world. But we just wanted to have a show today about women in history. And there's so many women that have been pushed to the back burners of history. And one of those women is Jeanette Rankin. And like I said in my introduction, there's a bumper sticker or a button that says, "Well-behaved women rarely make history."
Mm-hmm.
And Jeanette Rankin was by no means a well-behaved woman, but sometimes she is put to the back burner of history. I'm surprised when I talk about her, how many people don't even know who I'm talking about. So can you tell my listeners about, and we have plenty of time, so tell my listeners about this wonderful, amazing woman who I have really got a lot of inspiration or derived a lot of inspiration from, Jeanette Rankin.
So have I. And Don't feel like the Lone Rangers, because I did not ever know about Jeanette Rankin either. In 2002, when I was just beside myself with hopelessness, knowing my son was going to be in the war, he was in the military. He had joined in 2000 before 9/11, and I was just really freaking out. As a peace activist, you know, I couldn't believe he even went in, but the idea that he was actually going to go to war was so horrifying to me, and I needed a project. And I stumbled across Jeanette Rankin on the Carnegie Hall website. She had given a speech in 1917 as the first U.S. Congresswoman, and when I saw that little bit of history, I was astounded, just as a woman who had come of age, as you did during second wave feminism. And I thought, well, how could I never have been told about the first U.S. Congresswoman?
Well, exactly. I mean, that was a milestone. We have the first black president.
Yeah.
You know, we have the first. Nancy Pelosi was the first female speaker of the House.
Right.
But I studied history at UCLA. UCLA is not a slouch university. And
right.
I had never studied Jeanette Rankin.
Well, I know. There's a lot of reasons for that, and they're pretty disturbing, actually. The thing was is that within 10 minutes of discovering her, after Googling her, I knew two things. I knew that she was the character I'd been looking for all my life as a peace activist and a theater artist. You know, looking for that character who would speak for me,
right,
rather than me standing up for them.
Right.
And the second thing I knew was why she wasn't in the history books. When I discovered that she was the one who said, you can no more win a war than you can win an earthquake, I said, there you go.
Right.
You know, I mean, more people possibly know about Eugene Debs, but I don't think if you asked the man on the street who Eugene Debs is, they'd know.
No.
You know, nobody, you know, for the most part, the mainstream.
But I had studied Eugene Debs in history.
You have.
In my history courses, we did study Eugene V. Debs, but not in the way of him being a peace activist. Or we didn't study Mark Twain as somebody
right.
who was anti-imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you do study people, you don't know. Sometimes aspects of that were very important. That's the reason why Eugene V. Debs went to prison, because he spoke out against World War I.
I know, which is so frightening to think that, you know, the Espionage Act of 1917 could be used as an excuse to put a man in prison.
Eugene V. Debs ran for president while he was in prison.
And he got 1 million votes.
Yep, he was a socialist. And
you know, he was. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, today that's a dirty word, but you know, what he did, the work of his life, he was an incredible man. But if we're going to talk about people whose legacies have been skewed, worse than Jeanette, I mean, Jeanette's forgotten. I mean, she was made anonymous. But to me, the whitewashing, the crippleizing, the just Barbie doll of sizing of Helen Keller
is
so terrifying.
Yes.
She was born the same month and year as Jeanette Rankin,
mm-hmm.
June of 1880. And she is remembered for being this deaf, dumb, and blind girl who learned to communicate. And what a neat thing that was. Like she was some kind of puppet or doll that could talk or something. But she was an absolutely brilliant writer.
Mm-hmm.
She, as you know,
mm-hmm.
she wrote wonderful essays against war, against
right.
imperialism. She talked about, you know, she was a major socialist. You know, she was an incredible human being, and all we know is that she was, you know, the cripple girl who, you know, transcended whatever. I mean, that's really quite.
Well, that's probably because of The Miracle Worker and the movie that Patty Duke starred in when she was a young girl. And that was mostly about her teacher, the teacher of Helen Keller. But I don't remember seeing anything in her later life, Helen Keller's later life, when she was doing this writing and being a peace activist. I don't, like you said, I think that her legacy has just been really whitewash, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think that's because people like the story, you know, they like the first part of the story. And it's like Jeanette Rankin. I mean, there are Jeanette Rankin organizations that never mention her peace activism.
Right.
In this country.
Right.
You know, because they want to talk about her historicity as the first U.S. Congresswoman, but they're embarrassed by, or they don't want to alienate the right wing, or they don't want to, you know, whatever it is. But they don't want to put out there to the world her inclusiveness, you know, the totality of who she was. And before I really launch too much into who Jeanette was, I just want to mention, because I know you share my love for men in the peace movement,
mm-hmm.
so many of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, the work they do, as Jeanette said, it's really much more difficult for a man to be a peace activist than a woman. And I think this has changed a little bit. I mean, she said that back in the 40s.
Uh-huh.
But saying that, you know, I think it still is something that we have to consider, that men have to be worried about being labeled a coward much more than women. Women, people say, oh, she's a mother, she's whatever, you know, she's a girl, and they understand it. But men have a much harder time. And I think that the Brian Wilsons and the Frank Dorals and the Marshall Rosenbergs and Martin Sheens and, you know, Reverend John Hours and, you know,
right.
we could sit here all day talking about fantastic men who I think are much more courageous than military leaders.
Oh, absolutely.
There's, you know, who are carrying guns.
No doubt about that. Well, we need to talk a little bit about Jeanette's remarkable history as an uncompromising peace activist. As somebody, like you, we've said already, she's the first congresswoman. She became a congresswoman before there was universal female suffrage in the United States, didn't she?
Achieved suffrage in Montana in 1914, and Jeanette was a huge part of that campaign. But her father, John Rankin, was a very prominent Missoulian. He was the contractor who, for all intents and purposes, built Missoula, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And so her family was extremely well-known, very popular. They were incredibly exceptional people, in my opinion. Her father was a pacifist. He didn't allow guns on the property, on
wow.
the ranch.
In Montana, that's incredible.
I know. In the 1880s, I mean, 1890s, you know, back in the, you know, frontier days. That's
yeah.
a nice way of putting it. I was going to say cowboys and Indians
yeah.
days. Yes, back in the day, he didn't allow guns on the property, and he had a very dim view of the American army, and he really embraced the American Indians that lived there in their neighborhood. And Jeanette and her brothers and sisters played with the Indian children there. And so when they were slaughtered, they were just massacred in 1891. That occurred, and Wounded Knee occurred.
Uh-huh.
And Jeanette was just absolutely beside herself. You know, I mean, she was a child. These were her friends.
Right.
She had not been raised with the idea that they were savages and, you know, scary people who wanted to kill you and hurt you. So when she learned about these massacres, she was just so absolutely devastated. You know, it really really shifted her perception of the world. And she learned about this mother who was the mother of one of the kids in her class, little boy in her class, who had come across the plains, you know, with his parents as a tiny baby in a covered wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were coming across the prairie, whatever, they saw these Indians coming. And, of course, everybody freaked out. They circled the wagons. All the men pulled out their guns. They were ready to shoot the Indians. But this mother of this baby, for whatever reason, and in the play and in the movie, I, you know, extrapolated into this story about this mother, and I get inside of her heart and speak for her, but you know,
that's one of the parts that I read in the movie.
Right. That's right. And that's poetic license. But the heart of the story is that this mother walked out with her baby to these Indians while all of her people stood there with their guns cocked and ready to shoot and crying for her to come back, so terrified for her and the baby. But somehow, for whatever reason, she walked out there and she handed her baby to these savages.
Right.
And these were, you know, Indian men who had probably never seen a white baby, who had never probably been that close in peace with a white woman, and who looked at this baby and passed him around and laughed and talked amongst themselves and handed him back to his mother, and they went away.
Brilliant.
I know. And, you know, when I heard that, I knew that would be the departure point for the play and the movie, because that story, as Jeanette said many, many times in her life, was the beacon that you know, led her through all the hard times. I mean, if something like that could have gone so terribly, terribly wrong and ended in, you know, the horrific kind of violence that, you know, has happened infinite times, if that can end in a peaceful resolution, you know, Jeanette knew that there was almost nothing that couldn't be solved by simply greeting people face-to-face, going in the direction of the threat, facing the threat, head-on, facing it face-to-face, and saying, look, we have a choice here, and we can choose nonviolence, you know? And she did that. She did it in spite of terrible vilification that she suffered at the hands of the press. I mean, the World War I vote was difficult.
Right. When she voted against declaring war, right, for World War I?
World War One.
Right.
And then she voted against World War II. But the World War I vote, see, she was the only woman in all of Congress, but 55 other people in Congress voted with her.
Right, for World War One.
Right.
Right. And that was back in, those were back in the days when Congress still declared war. And World War II was the last time Congress has done that.
That's right. Yeah. And that was, it was actually Good Friday was when they walked in to start voting on it. I mean, it was Good Friday, Easter Sunday weekend, that whole thing. White doves encircled the Capitol, which a lot of people, you know, witnessed, and which is part of one of the biographies is called Flight of the Dove.
Are we talking about her World War I vote or her World War II?
Her World War I vote.
Right, right, because World War II was in December.
Right.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to let everybody down. Everybody was pressuring her so hard, her family, the suffrage movement, all the her friends in suffrage. And then something magical happened because she was really torn. She knew that all of these people, like Harriet Laidlaw, who with her husband had just basically bankrolled Jeanette's campaign, you know, was afraid. I mean, they thought, you know, this is going to lose momentum, and we gave everything we had. We mortgaged our house. We gave you everything, and if you vote against the war, then that's going to kill the suffrage movement, you know. And Jeanette had to, you know, hang on to that.
Right.
And she had to wrap her head around the fact that her brother was saying, look at how hard all these people work. Look at what you've achieved. You're committing political suicide. You know, and she was just, you know, absolutely, you know, she just says she was shaking. She hadn't slept in days. She was just a nervous wreck, and just, you know, her conscience was, you know, the angel on the one side and the
right.
devil on the other were just having a battle, and she was in the middle of it. And then Alice Paul, bless her Quaker heart, Alice Paul, mother of the ERA, walked out onto the floor, got a hold of Jeanette, took her off the floor, and said, Jeanette, we don't want the vote at this price. You vote your conscience.
And wouldn't that be, you know, not only was Jeanette our first female congressperson, but she was a congressperson with integrity. And
right.
we've had very few before her and very few since her. So we have to take a quick break, Jean Marie. When we come back, we'll talk about her World War II vote, which was even more disastrous for her. So please stay tuned. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox right here on CindySheehanSoapbox.com. We'll be right back.
First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. If you would like to keep your voice on the air, and you feel this show is important, please contribute now. Go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com. That's CindySheehansSoapbox.com. The phone is 562-912-5860. That number again is 562-912-5860. Please help us keep this show on the air. Your generous contribution is appreciated.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. As always, you can get a hold of me at Cindy at CindySheehansSoapbox.com. We're talking to super peace activist Jean Marie Simpson. So, Jean Marie, before we went to break, we were talking about Jeanette Rankin and her World War One vote, and it did have a political price for her, didn't it?
Well, truthfully, her constituency back home voted 16-1 in favor of what she did. But again, it's the news media, it's the history books that make it look like she was kicked out of office because of her vote. And that just isn't true. I mean, isolationism was a big deal.
Right.
People did not want to get into World War One.
Right.
You know, it was already a disaster in France and Germany, and people, you know, the media was slower then, but people were aware that it was a really dangerous, awful conflict, and they did not want their children in it. And so when Jeanette voted no, along with those 55 other men, of course, she's the only one that they made a big deal, and they said she cried, which she didn't. She had done all her crying before she got on the floor. You know, she was a wreck, but so was everybody. They stay up for 3 days. They're up at, I mean, the vote was at 4 in the morning or whatever. But anyway, what happened was, you know, the media just wanted to go on and on about how a woman doesn't belong in Congress because she does a wimpy thing. And then the other big thing that happened was that they gerrymandered her district. That was, you know, that's the thing you never read about.
Mm-hmm.
They totally gerrymandered her district. She was a Republican, you know, back in the days that the progressives were Republicans, long before the Civil Rights Act and the voting rights. And so it was all Democrat. And there was no way she could be elected there,
right.
You know. And so she ran for the Senate as an independent, and she didn't get in, you know, which is totally understandable, you know. She was a very controversial two-year congresswoman. You know, she was a total pioneer. And, you know, she didn't get the nomination. So she threw herself into her lobbying and peace activism. She worked for lots of activist organizations. She was one of the founding mothers of WILF. She went to The Hague in 1919. You know,
wow.
And she just hit the ground running and was a, you know, she realized when suffrage did occur in 1920, after she, by the way, introduced the 19th Amendment, nobody talks about that either.
Nope.
I mean, you know, I appreciate the movie Iron Jawed Angels, the HBO movie about Alice Paul, Iron Jawed Angels.
Right.
I just can't believe they left Jeanette out of it.
Right.
I watched that whole movie waiting to see Jeanette, and she never showed up. And I just couldn't believe it. But she actually introduced the 19th Amendment onto the floor of Congress. And it passed, of course, and was ratified when she was out of office. But when that occurred and women voted like their husbands,
mm-hmm.
You know, that was the biggest disappointment of Jeanette's entire life.
Yeah.
She thought for sure women would vote for life, and they would vote to keep their children safe,
right.
And she would never want to, you know, she thought they would never go along with a war, and that was just, you know, most women didn't vote, and then when they did, the vast majority voted like their husbands. So she realized, this is fine, we have suffrage, but I need to work on peace activism. So
mm-hmm.
she worked and worked and worked, and she was very, you know, she was a big popular speaker because she was first U.S. Congresswoman, so, you know, she spoke all over the world, and she traveled all over the world. She went to 50 countries. She watched what women's rights were like in countries where women had had the vote, like New Zealand. You know, she went over there and said, this is a wonderful place. Women have had the vote here for since however long, and it's a wonderful society. And she brought back those, you know, the wisdom that she gleaned in all those different trips she took. And by 1940, again, the isolationism was back. People did not want to repeat World War One, and this time it was promising to be much worse.
World War One was just a freaking disaster. Millions of people lost their lives, and it was just a horrible, horrible event. And like you said, many people were isolationists, and until Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Yep.
And, you know, there's so much documentation that Pearl Harbor was a provoked attack, but...
Or they knew it was going to happen, and they allowed it to happen.
Right.
You know, like 9/11, you know.
Right, like the Lusitania, like the Maine.
Exactly.
There's always something.
Right.
That they could, and this is the, but this is the wedge. This is the wedge that they use to make sure the masses don't congeal into a true body that could overthrow the dominant paradigm,
and
the capitalist paradigm.
What was the thing in Vietnam?
Oh, the Gulf of Tonkin.
The Gulf of Tonkin.
Right,
yes.
Which is a total lie. And
yes.
Everybody knows it, and people still defend that
right.
mess. I
right.
mean, it's just so, it's so telling about human nature. I'm often so embarrassed to be human, but when I think about Jeanette, I'm proud to be human.
Yes.
So I'm proud to be a woman, and I'm proud to be her sister, her great-granddaughter.
So Jeanette was in Congress when President Roosevelt asked Congress for a declaration of war against Japan.
Right. So she was 60 years old. She was absolutely beautiful, and just, you know, she was a crone with a great crown of white hair, and she was just a magnificent human being, and everybody loved her. I mean, people who even didn't like her loved her
mm-hmm.
once they knew her, because her whole style was to greet people as human beings. I mean, she learned most of that stuff from Gandhi, that, you know, as soon as you vilify a person, they aren't going to be your friend, and you can't get anywhere with them. But if you, and I know you and I philosophically disagree on this, and we don't have to go into this, but this was Jeanette's style, was to, you know, walk up to someone with whom she disagreed, tell them, you know, hello, it's nice to meet you. I so appreciate all these things about you, and as you know, we don't agree on this, this, and this. You know, and it got more and more serious as, you know, people were dying and babies were starving and people were working these hideous long hours and women were burning up in garment district factories and, you know,
right.
And yet she was able to keep her humanity on, she was able to keep it on the surface, although she was known for having a terrible temper. So behind closed doors, she did let it out now and then, or she would have, I think, gone crazy. Anyway, so in 1940, Jeanette's elected again in Montana on a peace platform. The whole world, the whole country was really against the idea of going into another war in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to go to war with Japan. They didn't want to be in a foreign war. And so, of course, 9/11. Of course, Pearl Harbor happened. And, you know, it was one of those glorious patriotic opportunities when everybody jumped on the bandwagon, and for the very first time, Roosevelt, or a president, you know, went on the floor of Congress and gave a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave the famous date that will live in infamy speech
right.
on December 8th, 1941.
Right.
But the really significant thing that happened that very few people know about is that there was a radio station there, because the president was supposed to talk for an hour, and he only talked for 8 minutes. And so when he was done, and it was insane. Everybody was screaming and happy and thrilled, and, you know, it was just one of those moments where the mob mentality takes over and nobody's thinking. But Jeanette was thinking. And she was trying to get the speaker's attention, Sam Rayburn.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying to get his attention and ask that the resolution be sent to committee, which is her job as a congressperson, as
right.
a representative of Montana. It's her job. If she feels something, she go to committee. She needs to tell the speaker that. And the speaker's job, you know, by law, is to recognize that. Well, the speaker pretended he didn't hear her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very obvious. And the transcript is out there. It's even on NPR. Walter Cronkite did a story right after Barbara Lee's vote following 9/11.
Right.
Walter Cronkite did a story likening Jeanette and Barbara Lee to each other, and you can hear it. You can
Barbara
hear
Lee,
her.
For my listeners, Barbara Lee was the only one to vote against giving George Bush authority to invade Afghanistan
without congressional
right.
approval.
Right.
Right. So when Walter Cronkite did this, he resurrected this, the audio
mm-hmm.
on this, you know, from December 8th, 1941. And so it's right there. You can hear her voice, her non-hysterical, gentle, beautiful voice saying, "Mr. Speaker." Now, in the movie and in the play, we dramatized it and made it seem like, you know, it was just this incredibly hysterical moment. But it really wasn't. She was a very, very poised politician, stateswoman, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she's saying, Mr. Speaker, I would like to be heard. Mr. Speaker, a point of order. Well, he just didn't notice her or hear her. He said that the lights were in his eyes or, you know, whatever it is. But
that makes sense. He couldn't hear her because the lights
yeah.
were in his
it's
eyes.
It's entirely disingenuous. It's mm-hmm. criminal behavior. And, you know, I'm not into punitive stuff, but if anybody should be dug up and put on trial and have their remains, you know, executed,
uh-huh.
and I'm a pacifist, but, you know, I feel my sense of justice just rises up around this because, you know, here she was doing her job. You know, she wasn't allowed to do her job. They called the roll call before he recognized her, and then when she was still calling for a point of order, she was still trying to be recognized during the roll call, he stopped and said, "The roll call may not be interrupted by an emotion or a point of order." And would he have said that if she were a man?
No.
You know?
Right.
So when it came time, she said, "As a woman, I can't go to war. And I refuse to vote to send anyone else. I vote no." And I was, you know, she was one. She was a single woman.
Yep.
Out
she
of
was
500
absolutely,
districts, however many odd districts
yeah,
there were.
Absolutely the only person to vote. And what an act of courage that was.
No kidding.
The day after, you know, at that time, we were attacked. The hysteria, the fright. My mother lived in California during World War II and Pearl Harbor, and you know the demonization of Japanese people. And she said that it was a real scary time to be alive. They would have air raids, and they'd have to pull the curtain, and, you know, they pull the blackout curtains,
right.
and, you know, I'm sure it was very terrifying.
Well, and even in our youth, because you and I were born about 14, 15 years after the war, I even remember, and you probably do too, watching old movies. It was all old World War II movies. You know, on TV and stuff.
Right, right.
And I used to hear planes and I used to go hide under the bed. Even in, you know, the early 1960s, well, I used to be afraid.
Not that, only that, but we used to have to go under our desks.
Right.
When they had every Friday at 1 or 2 o'clock, the air raid siren would go on and we'd have to dive under our desks. So
I know.
It was
and I was just
terrifying.
Always sure we were going to be attacked by someone. You know, someone from, you know, Asia or some Russian.
Right, it was the communists. It was the Russians that right. we were afraid of.
Yeah, it's, you know,
now
I didn't even know what communists
now it's a terrorist. Now it's whatever.
Yeah, it's always something.
Yeah.
It's always something.
But Jeanette Rankin refused to give in to that. And...
Well, because she had traveled the world.
Right.
She knew these people. She had been to Russia. She had been all over the Orient. She had been all over the world, and she knew that people were people. And she just didn't buy the rhetoric. You know, she just wouldn't jump on the bandwagon. And, you know, she walked her talk. But here she is, a white-haired 60-year-old woman, and 60 was a lot older in those days, in 1941,
exactly.
than it is today.
Right.
60-year-old grandmother-looking woman, tiny little woman by that time, in a dress with her little earrings and her little, you know, her little glasses on, mobbed by men from the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
She stepped in for fear of her life into a phone booth at the Capitol and called security, who had to come get her and escort her to her office. And then they had to post a guard there.
Wow.
Because these brave people who wanted, you know, to go fight for freedom and destroy the, you know, terrible enemy,
right.
the two-headed monster, wanted to physically assault this little old lady for saying, you know, what was true.
Well, it was an act of personal courage or physical courage, but it was also an act of moral courage.
It was.
I mean, it
absolutely was. And that their truths are so fragile. You know, this is what I've really found out in my 6 years of living with Jeanette under my skin and attempting to step into her shoes and actually speak in her words. I have learned that when people's truths are so fragile that they can't stand up to scrutiny and to questioning, then they become defensive, and that's when the names calling starts, and that's when the patriotism kicks in, you know. And I love that Emma Goldman, who was quoting Dr. Johnson, but I love that she, way back in the day, you know, turn of the century,
right.
was saying, what is patriotism? Patriotism, sir, is the last resort of scoundrels. Conceit and arrogance are the essentials of patriotism. And that is still true today. And Jeanette embraced that idea because, you know, when you travel the world and you see the babies and the mothers and the grandparents and the families and you see people living their lives, it is very hard to say, oh, my country's the best. We're better than they are. We're more important than they are. It's what Brian Wilson calls American exceptionalism.
Right. I've heard,
you know?
Noam Chomsky say that. I call it the exceptionalism of empire.
It is.
Because it's a characteristic of all empires, is this false patriotism and this jingoism and,
yeah.
you know, all kinds of these isms that the robber class keeps us.
Right. And Jeanette was so far ahead of her time, you know. But so were a lot of other people, you know. Again, so was Helen Keller. So was Emma Goldman. So was Dorothy Day. So, you know, so many of the women who were peace activists before it was even called that, they were just compassionate human beings.
Well, you know, Charles Lindbergh had a few other problems, but he was basically he was basically chased out of the country for being an isolationist. But he
After
also
the war
kind of, yeah, he kind of.
But he was also a Nazi.
Yeah, he kind of sympathized with Hitler. So there were some other problems about that. But what I really admire about Jeanette, and we only have a few more seconds left. This time goes by so fast. What I admire about Jeanette is she never compromised. It didn't matter if it was a Republican or a Democrat. You know, she was always against war. She was always for peace. She was for people. And she kept her integrity, and she put that above politics all the time. And that's what I always try to do myself, and what I struggle with is, you know, if Iraq and Afghanistan were wrong during George Bush, they're wrong during the Obama administration. And we just can't sit back and allow party politics to to harm our integrity or what we know is right and what we know is wrong. And so if Jeanette could do it in the time that she did it, with all the struggles, but sometimes I look and I think that not much has changed since she was in Congress and since she was a peace activist. Well, in fact, practically nothing has changed. And she marched on Washington during the Vietnam War.
Right.
And so she never, ever gave up. And that's my model of always working for peace, no matter what the odds are or what we're working against.
Well, and, you know, in Mark's day, religion was the opiate of the masses, but it's evolved into capitalism. And it was capitalism that was the opiate of the masses, even in Jeanette's time.
Well, it's capitalism, you know? And it's all the institutions. Religion still is exploited.
But I still think it's all capitalism. This
right.
is another show
it's
all and
work
another
together.
Conversation.
Capitalism, religion, statism, you know, they all work together. And that's why people have to buy my book, Myth America, The 10 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class. And we talk about that, too. Well, Jean Marie, thank you for joining us today. And thank you for bringing Jeanette Rankin alive for my listeners. If they knew about her, I bet they know more about her. And if they didn't know about her, I bet they're going to research her now. And really, you know, do yourselves a favor and learn more about this wonderful woman. And Jean Marie, you're a wonderful woman too. Tell my listeners how they can get a hold of you.
Well, they can reach me through my website, jeanmariesimpson.com. And I just want to point out, Cindy, that you're not alone. There's millions of people like us. We may be on the fringes, but there's millions of us all over the world, and we love what you do, and we love what you're doing, and just keep the faith and keep doing it.
Well, we will, and thank you so much, Jean Marie. Hope to talk to you soon. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and when we come back, we'll do our soapbox rant. The underwriter of today's show is Oakland's Grand Lake Theater. This spectacular vintage movie palace is one of the last independent theaters in the Bay Area. The Grand Lake never shows commercials before the movie, and fresh popcorn with real butter is free every Monday through Thursday. On Friday and Saturday nights, the mighty Wurlitzer organ is played in the main auditorium. Schedule information can be found at GrandLakeTheater.com. That's GrandLakeTheater.com.
First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. If you would like to keep your voice on the air, and you feel this show is important, please contribute now. Go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com. That's CindySheehansSoapbox.com. The phone is 562-912-5860. That number again is 562-912-5860. Please help us keep this show on the air. Your generous contribution is appreciated.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today, my Are You Effing Kidding Me is very simple. This past week, our country mourned the 6th anniversary of the illegal and immoral invasion of Iraq. I remember sitting in my living room 6 years ago watching the, quote, leader of the free world, unquote, announcing that the United States military had just embarked in shock and awe against the country of Iraq. The images made me physically ill, as they had 12 years before, when the criminal's criminal father was bombarding Iraq. I was also personally sick with fear, as my family had what we call skin in the game. Our son, brother Casey. On that night, Casey's life clock started ticking down. He had exactly 1 year and 15 days to live from shocking and awful. 6 years and over a million lives later, our military is still shamefully in Iraq. Our so-called peace president has created no positive change there and is in fact extending the length of the deployment of combat troops. The country has been ethnically cleansed. Violence is down because everyone there is either dead, displaced or too poor, wounded or frightened to move or continue fighting. Violence there is down, but not out, and you can bet there will be a strong U.S. presence in Iraq until every last drop of oil has fallen into the hands of foreign oil companies. What about Afghanistan? When will the so-called peace movement begin to protest the anniversary, October 7th, of the invasion of that war-torn country? When will we begin saying illegal and immoral in connection with Afghanistan and start mourning the dead there? Maybe when U.S. casualties begin to pile up as Obama surges U.S. troop presence there? Obama is sending incursions farther and farther into Pakistan every day. From one so-called dumb war to another dumb war, and the cycle of death will never end for we in the robbed class or the poor innocents of that region. The economic collapse is a very worrisome and immediate problem to so many of us, but we need to remember that the military-industrial robber class complex is the reason we are in this current crisis. The human cost of the occupations cannot and must not be separated from the economic cost. Every year I say that this will be our last. I don't believe that anymore. I believe that a very few of us will be demonstrating against these so-called wars for years, and every year that goes by, fewer of us will be out. It is our shame that we as a nation complacently sit by and allow the audacity of the atrocities of empire to continue in our names. Many have already given up or have been co-opted by the Democratic Party or the false specter of hope. Most have never even protested other than bitching on blogs or yelling at the TV when Bush or Cheney came on spewing their lies. And Cheney's still at it. Some will never give up. Here's to you. I honor your commitment to peace no matter who is the current warmonger occupying the evil office. Oops, I sort of meant Oval Office. Hasta la victoria siempre. My Ask Cindy question today isn't really a question, it's a comment. It's a comment from a listener, Michael Zanoni of San Francisco. I remember Michael very well because after the elections on November 4th, Michael sent me an email saying that he was sorry that he voted for me because he said I was being too negative towards the president. I tried to tell him that I wasn't trying to be negative, that I was trying to just be truthful, and I hadn't heard from Michael until just recently when he sent me this email. And this is what the email said, and here's my producer, Scott, to read it.
Well, the email goes, Cindy, after voting for you for Congress, I was turned off by your outlook and thought you were in opposition to my own viewpoints politically as a 52-year-old person. But after listening to your show just now, I've done a 180, and I'm so glad that despite the strong pulse of negativity and resistance to change that we all have to deal with daily in the post-Reagan bushland, we have great voices such as yours that so freely and naturally speak the ear-starving truth that we all yearn for and need daily. From all parts of my heart, I am with you, and you think and speak for me as well. And I'm proud to have such a great American come to me through the radio. And I want you to know that if you were in Congress, I think you'd be one of the brightest and most aware and compassionate and intelligent people there. Please keep working for the American people. We need your love and hope, Cindy. Thanks again.
Thank you for your letter, Michael, and thank you for listening to the show. Your soapbox action for the week is to tell all your friends about Cindy Sheehan's soapbox and to send my website, my link, out to as many people as you know and encourage them to listen to the show. We need to really build up this internet presence, and we really want a community that will make a difference in the world today. And one of those tools that we're using is a book that I have written called Myth America, 10 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution. You can go to my website, cindysheehansoapbox.com. Any donation of $10 or more will get an internet copy in your email box. And we really want to use this book. It's a book that exposes the myths of the robber class. It's a book that tells us what we can do outside the system of the robber class to confront that system and resist that system using the strength of numbers and the strength of commitment in our class, the robbed class. So you can see how a community needs to rise up around this. So that's it for our show this week. I thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading the word. We'll be talking to you again soon. As always, we'll send the link out to the show so you can listen to it. That's why you need to send our link out to your friends so they can be also involved in this alternative voice to what's out there right now. I'm Cindy Sheehan. I'd like to thank my guest, Jean Marie Simpson, my engineer, Scott, and I'd like to thank you again for listening. I can't thank you enough for listening. I'm always speaking the truth of the power to the people, to the power of greed. Take care. This is Cindy Sheehan.
Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground. Mother Earth will swallow you, lay your body down. Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground. Swallow you, lay your